Chapter 12. Aspen. Once Rouge was gone, Aspen looked around. The treasure room was almost entirely empty, though the girls had left the Spider Queen's exoskeleton behind, as well as a few other items they had apparently decided were either unusable or too disgusting. The jackalope brain he kept magically preserved in a jar on the shelf, as well as a few other similar items, still sat, undisturbed. He shook his head, chuckling to himself. Clearly, Rouge wasn't an alchemist, or those would have been among the first things to go in her bag. He would have to mention their value when she returned. In the meantime, however, he needed to either return to the inn or find a way to send a message back. He eyed Silas, but the little bat was now sleeping peacefully, snuggled up with her friend, belly full of fruits most likely produced from Rouge's original inventory. This room should be safe enough for them, even if he left, though he shouldn't go far while they rested. Leaning over, he stroked a gentle finger down Silas' head, and she shifted in her sleep. Then he pushed a springy curl back from Rouge's cheek. The girl didn't move, of course, but he smiled anyway. Even if her soul wasn't inhabiting this body right now, it was still her home in his world, and he would care for it. As he stood, something in his back protested, and he groaned quietly, pressing a hand against the pang. Sleeping in the furs had been good for his exhaustion, but not so good for the rest of him. He missed the days when he'd been able to sleep on the hard ground as easily as a soft bed. One thing being in the military had taught him, though, was to rest whenever and wherever he had a chance. Aspen took up his new staff, feeling it quiver beneath his hand. The leaves jingled softly, as though in question, and he shook his head. Giving an object that should have been inanimate a strand of his soul might have some very interesting consequences. He patted stick and murmured quietly, "Don't get too excited. We're just going down to see how Plum and the children are doing." First, however, he ducked back into the other rooms of his private sanctum. His thief had done a good job finding anything of value during her original search, but she hadn't quite found everything. Grunting, he crawled beneath the table in his office, rolling over on his back to look up at the underside. Long ago, he had drawn a series of sigils there with his long-lost athame. The blade had been a gift from a Tai, and Akuji had broken it within moments of capturing him. Fortunately, its role here had simply been as a blade that never dulled, and not a magical implement. Yosua, a friend of his, now longer dead than he had been alive, had imbued these patterns with runecraft, one of the few forms of magic that didn't vanish upon the death of the caster, and thus one of the most difficult to learn and use. The symbols had taken days to fill, and Yosua had been exhausted for days afterward. Aspen had paid him with a ring that enhanced runecraft, and they had both been pleased with the exchange. Carefully, Aspen pulled stick under the table, mentally commanding it to shorten, and the metal cap to sharpen. Soon he had a very dense, thick-handled blade. The thing was awkward to use, but he was able to connect a small gap in one rune, pouring mana down through the metal core and blade as he did. There was a sudden emptiness in his gut as the rune immediately sucked even more mana from him, and he was glad he was lying down. It seemed that his mana reserves were still not quite up to his old standards, but he could feel the strangely tingling warmth that told him they were filling back up. He was fairly certain that even if his capacity was lower, his regeneration was higher. Possibly much higher. Above him there was a sudden thump, and he grinned. He slid back out, muttering as his back reminded him again that he was nearly 43 years old, not 14 like his elven friend. He glanced at Stick, which was putting off a distinct feeling of gloom through their bond. All right, grow big again. In fact, I need you to do something pretty fancy. Do you think you can handle it?" Immediately, the staff shot out to its regular length, solidly nailing Aspen's foot as it did so. He yelped, then clutched the injured appendage, hopping on the other foot awkwardly. Stick helpfully sprouted rootlets so that he could use it as a stabilizer, and its leaves jingled apologetically. Aspen huffed, then leaned against the tall and sturdy staff. "It's all right. I guess we both have to get used to this, right? I have to remember to look where you're pointed before you grow." Gingerly, he tested his toes against the ground, then put more weight on the foot. Not broken at least. I'm fairly certain that if I had to pray to Gina to heal a broken bone debuff for this, I'd never hear the end of it. He frowned a little though, because his goddess had been unusually silent lately. He was supposed to be investigating some kind of evil taking hold in the city, and so far, he'd done nothing more than visit his old home. He was fairly certain he should have gotten some snarky quest urging him to hurry by now, but there was really nothing he could do about it. He could only do the task in front of him, after all. At the moment, that task was. He opened the large, heavy bag now resting on the table. He had intentionally filled it as full as he could and still lift it, and he found that while it wasn't exactly light as a feather, he could lift it with ease. His strength, at least, was far higher than it had been when his stats were primarily focused on magic. He was almost certain that all of his other physical stats were equally improved, and he was grateful. Though, he looked up at the sky, rubbing his sore back again. If my strength, stamina, and dexterity are so much higher, why do I still wake up feeling like an army of stone sprites spent the night using me as a dance floor? No immediate response was forthcoming, but he felt almost certain that some servant of his goddess had taken note of his complaint, and he would be hearing about it later. Turning back to the bag with a sinking feeling that he should have kept his grumbling to himself, he sent an image to Stick. "Can you do this?" In response, the staff widened in his hand, not quite to the point where he couldn't grasp it firmly, but if his hand had been any smaller, it would have been a challenge. A small slot opened invitingly in the top. Grinning, Aspen began carefully feeding the bag's contents into the staff. Down below, the children were waking up. Younger children ran around excitedly, while the older ones pulled pillows over their heads and tried to pretend they were deaf. He could sense Plum and a few of the oldest in the kitchen, probably preparing breakfast. Outside in the kitchen garden, he could sense a new life puttering around. Whoever it was harvesting some of the fruits and vegetables Aspen had brought to maturity the night before, and their light was a clear, calm green, weak but stable. He had a good idea who it would be, and he made his way down the stairs, leaving an amulet hanging from the inside door handle of the sanctuary, so that Rouge could get out when she woke, since the door locked automatically. Downstairs, he skipped the dining hall by going down the main stairs to the ground floor, circling back behind the disgusting display his houseguests had built, and entering the servants' access halls by way of a narrow door hidden behind a tattered banner. The corridor was dark but clean, and while he sensed a few spiders and mice scurrying away from his footsteps, he didn't have to clear any cobwebs. A minute later, he emerged into the kitchen via a small door in the east wall. He had to duck to clear the lintel, and when he stood straight, everyone in the kitchen was staring at him. An older boy, tall and spindly, with shoulders beginning to broaden and a belly that was practically concave, clutched at a small dagger stuck into his belt. Plum, her hair covered with a clean but dingy cloth, and an apron carefully wrapped over her breeches and blouse, smiled. "Hello," he looked at her meaningfully, and she coughed slightly. "I mean Aspen. Grandpa is in the garden." He worried at first about eating the things that grew there last night, but I told him you must have done something, and now he's gathering fresh ingredients for breakfast. Just then the door to the garden opened, and a very old man walked in. His brown face was heavily lined, and his eyes had spent so many years squinting in the sun that it was impossible to tell what color they were through the wrinkles. His back was curved, but his strong, sinewed hands carried a basket full of gleaming produce. A girl, small, round, and sturdy, bustled over and took the basket, already exclaiming over the quality and quantity of the things it contained. The children immediately lost interest in the adults, descending on the food like a small horde of starving trolls. The old man barely seemed aware that his burden had been removed. He was staring at Aspen as if seeing someone risen from the dead. He quickly pulled his hat from his brown pate and clutched it to his chest, and a single silver tear began to trace its way down his seamed cheek. Without a word, Aspen strode forward and wrapped his arms around the old man, holding him close as he cried. Once Tomas was able to get his emotions under control, he, Plum, and Aspen sat at the kitchen table. The children were sent upstairs with food for everyone, and the three adults ate absently as they talked. Aspen filled Plum and Tomas in on his own adventures. The old man was furious that his master had been disrespected and attacked, and both he and Plum soon devolved into a series of apologies that they hadn't tracked Aspen down and aided him. Aspen shook his head. "There was nothing anyone could do except what we did, flee. I was far too weak to resist, and even a glancing blow would have been enough to finish me. It's I who owe you an apology. I made arrangements before I left for you in the hospital to be supported for years to come, but clearly my preparations were insufficient." He bowed his head to his two most loyal servants. "I'm sorry." Plum and Tomas both erupted into denials, since how could he possibly have known that his orders would be disobeyed or so blatantly undermined? In return, Aspen insisted that he should have put more safeguards into place. The three of them went around like this for a while before Aspen finally raised a hand, chuckling. "All right, all right. I'll accept that I could have done nothing differently, if you will do the same. I'm here now, and before I go, I have this for you." He untied the now much-reduced bag from his belt and poured it out on the table between them. Glittering gems poured out into a heaping mound, light catching in their facets like a rainbow fire had been captured on the simple wooden platform. Plum stared, mouth agape, but Tomas was on his feet, jaw set in a stubborn line that Aspen knew all too well. "No, my lord. I lost you once to my shame, and I'll not abandon you again. If you're not staying, then neither am I. Where you go, I go." He sat back down, expression set in layers of unyielding lines. Aspen leaned forward, hand on his face, sighing in defeat. Two of the children, a boy and a girl of such similar size and features that they had to be siblings, if not twins, served as messengers to Restor and the rest of Aspen's erstwhile companions. About an hour later, the kitchen was packed, and the children, bellies full and unafraid for the first time in months with so many trustworthy adults about, were running through the bottom floor of the house in wild abandon. Aspen, Plum, Tomas, Restor, Manuela, and surprisingly, Tessel sat at the table. Tia, Restor's assistant, and Vaughn, the young wood elf on Arnspiga, were chatting quietly near the garden door. Flu Flu was somewhere playing with the children, which supported Aspen's feeling that the girl was likely only a little older than Rouge. Millie was at the oven, happily preparing meal after meal for anyone who asked, which was nearly everyone, using ingredients Tessel and Flu Flu had donated from their inventories. Struthio was beside his new wife, silently but happily assisting her. Miley, Rouge, Mott, and Lyric seemed to be the only ones missing. Tomas, having declared his intention of following Aspen wherever he went, had sent Plum into a mood of deep contemplation, and now, pushing an empty plate away, she stood up. Walking around the table until she was beside Aspen, she suddenly collapsed to her knees, head bowed until her forehead touched the floor in a pose of abject supplication. "Please, my Aspen. Please." Her voice was muffled by her proximity to the ground, but her words were clear. The room fell silent as everyone looked over at this abrupt activity. "Please take us with you as well. The children aren't safe here, and the city is becoming more dangerous daily. The gangs are bolder, the nobility is corrupt, and I have begun to hear rumors of citizens vanishing from their homes in the night. Whole families simply gone." She looked up, and the dark eyes beneath her heavy straight brows were glimmering with tears. "I know you would like to return to your peaceful life, but we still need you. You've said there's no one else living north of the mountains for as far as you can see. There's enough room then for us to build a small town. Some of the children have friends or family who were too poor to continue caring for them. I'm certain they would also like to leave Bright, but there was nowhere we could go to begin again. Nowhere that's not controlled by the king and his cronies anyway." Aspen frowned, reaching down to lift the girl to her feet. She stood reluctantly, but kept her head bowed. "What do you mean, the king's cronies? King Chester barely cares for anything outside his books and his dioramas. Duke Gerald has run this city since before the war ended, and his cronies are well established. They're quite happy with things as they are. And what's this about people vanishing?" Plum shook her head. "The king has begun taking power back from Gerald. Or at least someone representing the king is doing so. The new Lord of Bright, whoever it is weakening the nobility, and as a result, the criminal elements are becoming far bolder. The disappearances are just rumors for now, but they're everywhere. Something spoken of so openly must have some basis in fact." For the first time in what seemed like a very long time, a quest notification appeared in Aspen's vision. Quest, Into the Fog begun. Don't let your preconceptions cloud your judgment. People are Ms. Ting. Track down the source of the rumors before the clues vanish like smoke. Success, experience, variable increase in intelligence and wisdom. Failure, people will continue to disappear. Probably. If they're actually disappearing in the first place. He sighed. Let me think on this. The wilds are no place for children, but I can't leave you all here if your lives are indeed in danger. We'll be here a week at least, and I'll see what I can find out. Though, He looked around at the avid expressions of curiosity on the faces of those surrounding them, and smiled wryly. I hadn't planned on being quite so open about my business here. He watched as a deep red flush stole over Plum's face, making her resemble her namesake far more than usual. She collapsed back down on the floor. Oh my lord! I'm so sorry. I forgot you asked us to keep your identity a secret. I've been so worried for the children that I just... Aspen pulled her to her feet again, afraid the young woman would begin banging her head on the floor. She must have been deeply frightened and worried to be acting like this. Since she had grown up with Bertie, she had always treated him far more casually than the other servants. In fact, her parents and grandfather had often taken her to task for not showing enough respect to their lord. This outpouring of something akin to awe had to be a result of his return from the dead. Restor spoke up from his chair at the table. The old man's shining white hair gleamed in the sunlight from the freshly washed window as he tilted back in his seat slightly. His rich voice betrayed his amusement. Never fear, lass. Your master's disguise wasn't as good as he thought. Young Vaughn told me several days ago that he was using magic for one thing. Everyone here knew he was no simple farmer, though. He looked around, waving a hand to indicate not just the kitchen but the manor and grounds as a whole. I didn't suspect he was once a Ty's left hand. Sitting back down, Aspen motioned for Plum to do the same. The girl reluctantly obeyed, and her grandfather patted her hand approvingly as she did. Clearly, Tomas fully supported her request. Aspen looked around the room, finally taking off the freshly woven hat that he'd completed that morning, and setting it down on the table in front of him with a defeated shush of dry grass on wood. He ran his hand through his own thick hair, which was just beginning to show strands of silver woven through the brown and gold. His pale topaz eyes gleamed, and his rather distinctive nose stood proud once the shadow of his hat was no longer obscuring it. Fine then, yes, I was once known as Jorgis Pembroke. I was the king's necromancer, a Ty's left hand, hero of the Battle of Bright. He waved a hand dismissively, all that. Now, however, I'm just a farmer with a few tricks up my sleeve. As absolutely everyone apparently knows, I lost all of my skills and spells, along with my stats, to a Kuji. Believing I was dying, I left so I could get a little peace. One golden eyebrow went up, and he gave Plum a rather pointed look. Now I'm back to resupply before I head home. I'm fortunate enough to have some funds left from my previous life, so I was going to find a way to re-establish Lark's hospital and orphanage while I was here. He raised a finger. I have no interest in remaining in Bright. I simply want to make sure that Lark's legacy is safe and make the city a better place for those she spent her life caring for before I leave. My plan was to ask my new friends, he pointed the finger at Restor, to quietly assist me in turning some of those funds into resources for that purpose. He turned the finger on Plum, then when the girl flinched, he realized he might have been a little too enthusiastic and put it away. I will then, quietly, make my way back north, taking a caravan of farming implements and supplies so that I don't have to work so bloody hard at work. Then I'm going to retire. Again. Grow just enough food for myself and my companions, read books, and spend the winter sipping tea in front of the fire with my feet up. Manuela, who had been silent until now, since nothing that came before was a particular surprise to her, either, barked out a laugh. Aspen, my friend, she said, her smoky voice rasping with amusement, you'd be bored out of your mind before the first winter was over. Aspen opened his mouth to argue that he'd already passed his first winter without being at all bored, but hesitated. The truth was, he'd had plenty to do. Rouge and Mott's visits had given him something to look forward to, and between Saravi and Juniper, his three companions, and all the animals, every day had been busy. He'd also been working on his mage smithing, and reading and rereading every book the head librarian had sent with him that had any reference to farming in it. Restor tilted back in his seat a little more, looking up at the ceiling. When he spoke, it sounded like he was just musing aloud, but Aspen wasn't fooled. Might happen that our caravan isn't filled with goods yet. We'd usually spend more time here, but with the triathlon coming up, prices are high, just like they were in Bloodhaven. Too much demand for too little product. No one's buying farming equipment now, though, so prices should be low on those. Everyone here wants weapons, armor, consumables, and luxury items. He rocked back and forth in his chair, seemingly unaware that the whole room was watching him. Might be, too, that if there was a town up north of the mountains, we'd do well to be the first to establish a trade route. All four chair legs reconnected with the ground, and his sharp blue eyes met Aspen's topaz ones. "Young Miss Rouge gave me a few samples of your crops, and I hear the plot out back was only doing fair until you showed up. Even if nothing else was produced up there, we'd sell plenty, I expect, with no one else for competition for a while at least, and we'd get a good price for such high-quality produce, especially in the cities. Far easier to make dishes that give bonuses from superior ingredients, as I'm sure Miss Millie could confirm." The young cook nodded, her face thoughtful, as she wiped her hands on a kitchen towel. Restor turned his calculating gaze back on Aspen, then flicked a look to Plum and Tomas. "Starting a town is no small thing, but it seems to me you've a good start right here. It's also possible," he glanced at Tia, "that there might be a few others looking to get out of the city. Miss Plum isn't the only one who's noticed that things aren't as safe here as they were when we last came through. Some of us have families here, and those families might not mind finding somewhere else to be." Tia's chocolate eyes widened, and then she nodded, a smile blooming on her face. "I stay with my sister and her family when we come to Bright. Last night she told me the gangs have raised their protection fees, and no one has seen the elderly couple who ran the shoe store down the road in over a week. When the couple's son went to the guards, they said citizens were no longer a priority. They've been told to focus on helping travelers with quests and training. My sister told me she was thinking of moving to Goose of all places, and when I told her what happened there, she was nearly in tears, fearing there was nowhere to go. It seems like Bright is on the way to becoming another Bloodhaven, and the common people here are frightened." Aspen rubbed his forehead. "You all know there's no town up north, right? By the time we get back there, it'll be nearly summer, and you'll have to plant crops and build a town before winter. From nothing. I have one poorly built hovel, and I have no idea what monsters may be lurking outside the small area we claimed. There's at least one good-sized cave system, and there are all kinds of dangerous creatures that like to live underground." Tia and Restor exchanged looks. Restor turned back and shrugged. "Now that the idea has been raised, we need to discuss it seriously anyway. After all, as you say, you've only claimed a small space. There should be plenty left over for whoever might go up there." "What about down here?" Aspen exclaimed in frustration. "Akuji's forces destroyed several small villages and even some good-sized towns on their way through. You could settle in any of them. There are undoubtedly some buildings still standing, or at least good foundations on which to start. Plus, the resources and dangers of those areas are well known." Everyone in the room exchanged surprised glances. Surprisingly, it was Millie who answered this time. "Haven't ye heard, Aspen?"
"Ah, my lord."
"Several groups have tried settling th old towns, but none of them last long. The ruins are haunted, and the ground will not take bluestones. Anyone who tries to stay there, well, they die or they go mad." Silence ruled the room as everyone nodded in unison, and as if making up for lost time, yet another quest notification popped into Aspen's vision. Quest: Crazy Like a Flock's begun. Strange events are occurring at the ruins of old villages around Quarternell. Cover some ground and find out what's going on. Success: variable. Failure: people continue dying or going insane from their experiences. Millie and Struthio excused themselves first. Millie had a determined expression, and the little bag in which she kept the gold Rouge had given her was now bolstered by additional funds from Restor as well as several small gems from Aspen, which he could now give her without a go-between. She should have enough money to be able to open a restaurant in almost any part of the city. Restor and Tia had also taken her aside and given her some low-voiced advice before she left, and Aspen was confident that she would know the best areas to begin looking for an available property. Once everyone else saw that no more delicious and buff-packed food was forthcoming, they too began to trickle out. Tia and Restor, exchanging suspiciously self-satisfied looks, left to buy supplies. Plum accepted a few of the smallest gems and went to exchange them for food, clothes, and at Aspen's urging, books for the children. Lark had insisted Plum also learn to read and do basic math, and Plum had been trying to pass on her knowledge to the urchins she'd gathered, but it was difficult without simple books, paper, and pens. She'd used what had been left behind in the house, but the books weren't really suitable for a beginning reader, or young minds in general. Tessel had to return to her world to go to work. Manuela was off examining the children, since it had been quite some time since any of them had been seen by a healer. Tomas, who apparently slept during the day so he could hunt at night, had reluctantly gone to the small bedroom that he was using now that it wasn't safe to sleep alone in his cabin. Flu Flu had gone off with some of the oldest children on some errand Plum had sent them on, claiming that she had received a quest from the great god Toko to assist these brave souls in their noble pursuance. Vaughn, who had been alternately listening to the group in the kitchen and going off to play with the children, returned at this point and seemed determined to chat with Aspen. He sat down at the table across from the farmer and leaned forward, expression intent. "Are you aware," he asked abruptly, "that many of these children are half-breeds of some sort? Mostly half-elves, though I hadn't realized that my high-elf cousins were quite so generous in their affections, but there are also a half-dwarf and a half-troll. Yet they all play together as if they were a litter of puppies, with no mind for their backgrounds." Aspen shrugged, having already noticed that a few of his little guests had pointier ears or grayer skin than was normally found in full humans. "I'm not surprised. Bertie's hospital was the only one in the city that would treat half-breeds. Even if their parents had enough money to pay another healer, the healer would rarely accept such a client, either out of prejudice or fear that it would ruin their reputation. Once the war was over, and this became the only city that would take in those who had no home to return to, regardless of their race, such children became inevitable. Where else would they end up but in Gina's hospice?" Vaughn's expression was neutral as he tilted his head, regarding Aspen solemnly. "Will you allow them to stay? Once the new hospital and orphanage you want to build goes up, it will just become a target again. I've no doubt that sheer greed wasn't the only motivation of those who shut it down before. There are those who would see every race kept pure by whatever means necessary." Sighing, Aspen leaned back in his chair and stared up at the ceiling. "I used to tell Lark that she should stop treating the halfborns. Or at least do so more quietly. She would just look at me and tell me that Gina loves all the children, and that would be that." He sat up straight again, looking back at Vaughn. "Most people think of Atai as a cold goddess, you know. A hateful dark presence waiting for death. Hoping for it. But the truth is far different." A little half-smile lingered around his mouth as he thought of the cold visage of his former mistress. But her black eyes weren't empty. No, they were so full no light could show though. "Atai and Gina aren't so very different. They both accept anyone. We are all the same in birth and death, and it's only the lives we live in between that differentiates us. So when Lark told me that her goddess wanted her to take in everyone," he shrugged, mouth twisting wryly. "Well, my goddess did the same. Plum simply learned from her best friend. I'll not tell her to change now, especially since," he glanced up again, smiling just a little, "Gina loves all the children." Vaughn sat back, soft gray focused on Aspen's face. "Even when those children include the dark races? Trolls, orcs and goblins?" Aspen thought of Juniper as she had been when he left the farm, small, independent, loving, full of energy and giggles, and more than a little green. He smiled fondly, and Vaughn stared, clearly not having expected this reaction. The farmer nodded his head. "Gina loves all the children," he said again. The young wood elf leaned forward. "What about their parents? What if they want to keep their babes, not give them up? They and their children will be persecuted. Not by everyone, perhaps, but even a few could make their lives miserable." Aspen waved a helpless hand. "It's a hospital, Vaughn. They heal them and they send them home, if home they have. That's all they can do. What about when the children grow up and leave the orphanage? How will they survive when no one will hire them, when some people simply try to kill them on sight, and no one truly cares?" Again Aspen waved weakly. "The orphanage can teach them to fight." Vaughn sat back, crossing his arms, face clearly expressing his incredulity. "My people have no such orphanages. Children are taken in by their nearest relatives. However, we also don't accept what we call changelings. Rarely an elf on Arnspiga will marry and have children while they're gone, but they always know it's only temporary. We must return when our time is up," he held up a hand to forestall Aspen's obvious question. "And we leave behind anyone we met, no matter how precious." He laid his slim hand flat on the table in front of him, examining the scarred and calloused palm as if it might reveal some deep truth. "I had a half-sister here in Bright. She'd be nearing 50 now, and her father would be 70. He looked up, meeting Aspen's eyes again. "That's if either of them is still alive. Most of our people don't speak of those they leave behind, but my mother married my father for necessity, not love, and though she has affection for him, her heart is locked up in the memory of a human man. She spoke of my sister often, and I promised her that when I was old enough, I would go and find out what happened to them." The elf flipped his hand over, using it to push against the table as he stood abruptly, his chair sliding back with a sudden shriek. "Today I will go to the home my mother had to leave behind, and discover what has become of my sister and the man who would have been my father, if my mother had been allowed that choice. I have spent this morning speaking to the children, and truly," he dropped his head, turning away so Aspen couldn't see his face, "I fear what I will find." Quest, Fateful Family begun. Help Vaughn discover the fate of his half-sister and her father. Success, variable. Plus 20 relationship points with Vaughn. Failure, Vaughn's death. Well, that was clear. Aspen stood, crossing the room so he could rest a hand on the young elf's slim shoulder. "I'll help you find them, or at least what happened to them. We just need to wait for Rouge to return." Vaughn turned, smiling blindingly up at the much taller man, gray eyes bright with suppressed tears. He opened his mouth to speak, but at that moment, the garden door flew open. Lyric stood there, grinning broadly as he looked around. His expression dimmed as he took in the serious expressions of the two inside. He held up his merchunga, smile now somewhat questioning. "Aspen, listen. I learned my first real song." Aspen and Vaughn both turned to him, and Aspen smiled encouragingly. Vaughn hadn't heard the tortuous lute playing that Lyric had been committing, but he clearly recognized the boy from the day before, and his hand fell away from the weapon at his belt. Lyric raised the merchunga to his mouth, blissfully unaware of how close he had come to being skewered like some of Bright's infamous mystery meat on a stick that was sold by street vendors at events and festivals. The bard placed the instrument firmly between his teeth, then plucked the tongue. An odd but not unpleasant buzzing sound began, and Lyric tapped one foot as he opened his mouth more or less to produce different sounds. The cheerful and rhythmic tune made Aspen want to tap his foot as well, and he felt his weariness and worries fade a little bit. When the song was done, Lyric lowered the mouth harp, rubbing at his mouth and grimacing slightly. "I'm always worried I'll drool when I do that." He laughed a little self-deprecatingly. "What do you think, though? It's just a level 1 buff, but it gives you a small bonus to morale and temporary resistance to stamina drains. Plus, I'm already level 5 in the skill. I got to level 4 really fast because of previous experience." The boy was practically dancing in place, and Aspen had to chuckle. Lyric made a face. No wonder Rouge is so good at all her thiefy gymnastics and stuff. Did you know she got a silver medal in the state gymnastics tournament when she was 10? I mean, her mom got mad at her for not getting gold, but... anyway, her dad was like ELA Arper when he was in college, and did some martial arts and sword fighting too. I bet they both got some awesome boosts to their skill gains from all that. The boy took a breath, red flushing his pale cheeks. "Sorry, I didn't mean to start," he glanced at Aspen, and his cheeks grew even redder. "I mean, I was just so excited about the song, and you." He stopped, smacking himself in the face. His expression went fixed for a moment, and there was that strange flicker as he adjusted his headset. "Right, no facepalms," he muttered to himself as his hands moved around his ears as if tucking in something they couldn't see. Vaughn and Aspen watched bemusedly, glad enough to have their conversation done. It had been time for them both to think about the exchange anyway. "Ah, Lyric," Aspen murmured finally, "not that I mind, but how did you find us?" The lad looked up, light blue eyes huge in his round youthful face. "Oh. Yeah, Rouge texted me. I guess that'd be like a magic message or something to you guys. Anyway, she said she'd be back in an hour or so," his eyes flicked up to his right. "Well, 2 hours here, and that you guys were," he made the same little squiggles with his fingers that Rouge sometimes did when she was quoting someone else, "in the creepiest house in Sector 18H on the Bright map." He shrugged, as if the rest was simple. Aspen, remembering the decayed and overgrown appearance of the property from the street, supposed that it was. Knowing what he now did, he suspected that Plum and Tomas had encouraged the rapid deterioration in yet another effort to keep both thieves and potential buyers away. At this point, Vaughn, sensing that the conversation was shifting, cleared his throat. He bowed slightly to Aspen. "If we have 2 hours before Lady Rouge returns, I will attend to a few matters that may help us in our efforts later." He lifted a hand in farewell and slipped out the garden door with no further delay. Aspen shook his head. "Why is everyone using the kitchen door?" Lyric blinked. Rouge said not to come in through the front, because it would attract attention. There's a break in the wall around back, kind of hidden in the woods. It looks like a lot of people have been using it lately though, because there are broken branches and flat grass all over the place. He grinned. I got my tracking skill leveled up to 2 from that. You get tracking in the tutorial, but then you never get to use it unless you go hunt in the woods or something. I mean that's what it's for, but hardly anyone actually. His voice trailed off when he saw Aspen's bemused smile, and his hand twitched as if he started to hit his face again and then stopped himself. Sorry again. It's just that you. He motioned to take in Aspen's appearance from head to foot. You're. The eyes and the muscles and. Where's your hat? He asked rather plaintively.